Good morning, everyone. Is everyone awake and ready? Good. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, dearest Mother, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Singing the Ram Nam this morning reminded me when I was a truck driver, a young man, and taking the Ram Nam and singing it as I would drive the truck is a wonderful combination of activity, except when my eyes rolled up to the third eye point and I couldn't keep them open very often, so then that didn't combine too well with truck driving, but then I'd have to pull over to the side of the road and wait for some time for the mood to pass, and then I could continue on. But what a wonderful thing to feel the vibration as you sing, feel the vibration as you chant. I couldn't sing out loud for long periods of time, but I would begin with the song, with the chant, and then it would take me within and I would be mentally chanting inside. And it will lift you into a state of bliss and of peace and of communion with God as little else can in such a short amount of time. And what a wonderful way to go to God, to sing your way to God and to love God and to nurture that feeling of connection with Him. A poem from Papa Ram Dass entitled Love for the Beloved. The deer is lost, struck with the strains of music, as the bee is lost in the sweetness of honey, as the hero is lost in the fervor of battle, as the mother is lost in the fondness of her child, so let thou be lost in the absorbing love for the divine. And Papa, on a writing on meditation. Mind is a veil that shuts you from the splendor of your immortal spirit, which is your real being. Tear up this veil by means of constant meditation and self-surrender. Retire within yourself from time to time and lose your little ego in the infinite consciousness of your supreme self. You are verily the embodiment of truth. Wake up to this awareness. What is needed for the beginner to arrest the restless nature of the mind is a steady practice at concentration. To achieve this end, Ram Dass found the constant repetition of the Guru Mantram as a sovereign means. The wandering mind is thus brought under control and is fixed at one point. The point is God, the symbol and spirit of the mantram. Side by side with the repetition of the mantram, bring into the mind the glorious attributes of God. God is within me. God is infinite. God is bliss, purity, and peace. God is light of lights and the power of powers. God is the master of the worlds. God is the doer and non-doer at once. God is knowledge, love, compassion, and forgiveness. God is the one truth and one reality. The universe is God's self-revelation. God dwells in all beings, creatures, and things. God fills all spheres and planes of life. My body, mind, and senses, and intellect, and soul are all God's. God permeates my being. I am God's very image, both as the revealed and unrevealed. There exists nothing but God. God is all and all. God is all. Meditation is nothing but a method of auto-suggestion. The veil of ignorance, which is an obsession, can be removed only by a continued hammering on the mind of the immortal nature of your true being. Successful meditation requires well-controlled and concentrated mind, for which the following rules have to be observed. A diet of sattvic food, i.e., non-irritant foods. Solitude. Society of saints. Devotional music. Reading the lives and teachings of saints. Sit in any steady asana or posture suitable for you with your spinal cord and head erect. Shut your eyes, but internally direct your gaze between the eyebrows and gradually to the crown of the head. Sit fixed in this gaze. Repeat the mantra mentally for some time to stop the wavering mind. Then, when the mind is calmed down, mentally repeat the great attributes of God one by one. This process, repeated from day to day, will bring on self-absorption, giving you the vision of light, etc. Go still deeper into the realm of utter silence and stillness of your higher self or spirit, and rise completely above the body. Now you will realize the undifferentiated aspect of God, bringing on the experience of your absolute identity with God. Come out of this state, which would be difficult in the beginning, but can be possible by exercise of a strong will. And for you, the world outside will now stand transformed at the very expression or manifestation of God. Everywhere, the light of God will dazzle your eyes. Even in the apparent diversity and activity of nature, you will strangely be conscious of an all-pervading stillness and peace of the eternal, a consciousness which is unshakably permanent. You will also feel that you are liberated from the harassing dualities of life, followed by the crowning experience of an abiding state of ineffable ecstasy. The ineffable ecstasy, experienced when the individual sense is dissolved in the supreme consciousness of God, is the highest acquisition of human life. When the source of immortal joy is opened within us, it flows and saturates every fiber of our being, internal and external, and makes our life at once a waveless peace and a ceaseless thrill of ecstasy. Death, fear, and grief have then no significance for us. You see and feel a round of joy and delight in all movements, in the visible expressions of the undivided and eternal life and truth. The one splendor of divine light envelops and pervades all forms and things. The one vision of endless peace and bliss dazzles and enchants you everywhere. Nay, you realize that you and the universe are the form and substance of the infinite truth. Oh, the sublimity of this exalted state, indescribable state. Blessed indeed are those who are filled with this inexhaustible nectar of immortality. Papa writes with absolute realization and in such simple terms that we can all easily understand what he was getting at. But there's a vast difference between understanding with the mind and having the experience. When we have the total experience of God realization, and we have that upliftment in the bliss and in the peace, and we feel that every cell of our being is saturated with that divine consciousness, then there is no doubt left in the mind. There is a feeling of oneness with everything that is, and spirit is no longer contained within this body form, but rather it stretches out into infinite reaches. And there is no limit. There is nothing that is not part and parcel of your being. And with that comes great peace and bliss and knowledge awareness. Wisdom rises up within your own consciousness, not made with this mind, but rather coming to you rather than from you. And yet it comes in very intimate terms. And you know that you know, as Mother used to say. And this is the greatest experience that a man or woman can have. And it is what we are all intended to be from the very beginning. It is part and parcel of the design of which we came with. And to realize this will set you free, a freedom that you cannot express in words alone, but a freedom that you can have through experience within your own being. God has kept me awake in such a state, just a few hours of sleep this last night, and so we had a wonderful day of silence yesterday. And during that time, it was interesting because from the very moment we began, I felt as if there was a huge weight weighing down upon my shoulders and my head. And the thought of a cross came, but it felt like a 1,000-pound cross, something that was just, my body felt like it was could be an aluminum can that you could just crush if you wanted to. The weight was so terrific. And what sustained me was the divine life that was within me in that experience state for the full 6 hours that we were in meditation together. And then when we were done, it lifted and it was gone. It's a very interesting thing. And this is the way that God works through this form. It's a fascinating life, I can tell you. It takes you through so many different experiences. We have had wonderful experience of different souls, of George Baldegara coming and doing 4 days of work. And when he comes, he works like a lion. He starts early in the morning and goes late till night. Larry came and has worked for a couple of days doing the electrical, and we're doing a building project up there. Brad Kelly, this last year, he came and put a new electrical service in. And it's so humbling to me to have souls come and serve in this way, to contribute in this way, and as far as I can tell, from nothing at all that I've done. It's just simply it happens. God inspires it somehow. In George's case, he's got his own home renovation going on, and he leaves that and he comes down to our house and works on it for 4 days straight. How do you explain such a thing? And yet there it is, and it makes me so feel so humbled in my heart, down to the very core. And the people who support this work through financial contributions and through a variety of services and all the different ways that it comes, and it brings tears to the eyes because it's just such a lovely, loving kind of thing. In some traditions, they talk about donations as being love offerings, and I've been a little bit put off by that term at times because it turns into something that's a bit trite, it seems, or something that becomes just something to say. But when you feel, and with contributions that come and people that give, and I receive that money, and when I receive it, I feel the vibration behind that money, and so oftentimes there is such great love that is imbued with that monetary donation. And so it's not just the material means, which is a necessary thing in order to operate in this world, but it is the love that comes with it, and it truly is a love offering in that case. And it's wonderful and it's tremendous. And I just want to thank everyone for all they do in supporting this work. And of course, the greatest thing that each of us can do is to live the life, the spiritual life, to live a life of Dharma, that is of righteousness. Dharma first comes in the form of spiritual law that we learn, the Ten Commandments, the Yamas and the Niyamas, as they are stated in the Vedas, and they're the do's and the don'ts. And we learn to guide the mind in this way, and we have to, because we're not taught. It doesn't come naturally, not because it's not inside of us, but because it's not yet come into fruition. Our old habits have taught us to abide by this body and not by the internal, eternal law. But as we refine our lives through obeying the outer laws, an inner nature is awakened. And then we go according to the inborn dharma that is within each of us. Some of it is sleeping, and others it is awake. And when that inborn dharma awakens within you, you could no more do something that would create harm for another than anything. You just can't do it. It goes completely against your nature. And you are then abiding by an internal code that is directed by God. And when you have that, you don't need the outer laws so much, but we have to purify the body, the mind, and the spirit absolutely 100% in order to go completely by that internal law. As an English professor once told me in a writing class, he says, first you have to learn all the rules of the English language before you can break them as a writer. So you have to learn all the rules as a spiritual being and abide by them. And once a master, then you might break one occasionally here and there. Because there is a higher law. There is a higher duty that goes beyond just the outer form of things. As Jesus demonstrated when he would eat food on the Sabbath. And he would do other things. He would heal people on the Sabbath and these other kinds of things, because people were abiding by the Sabbath in an outer tradition, but inwardly they were not abiding by it. And certainly on the seventh day God rested is describing an internal state. It's when you've gone beyond all the six lower chakras and you enter into the Sahasrara at the crown of the head. And when you enter into that, you go into a true state of rest. You go beyond body consciousness. You go beyond everything of duality. And you enter into a supernal state that you cannot describe because it transcends duality. But it is pure state of being. It is pure peace. It is a pure stillness. And when you enter into that, then you have truly come into that seventh day of rest. Reading from Paramahansa Yogananda from an East-West magazine. This is dated July 1933. And it is the science and art of prayer, making prayer effective. The word prayer smacks of beggary. We are the children of God. He made us in His image. Why should we beg? The word prayer is antiquated and carries with it the consciousness of supplication. The psychology of supplication consists of doubt as to whether the Father will grant what we ask. We, being children of the Almighty Father, can claim everything which He possesses, namely, wisdom, immortality, happiness, and abundance. The word prayer should be changed to loving demand. The Father made us His children, and we have chosen to be beggars. We must destroy our deficiencies and become acknowledged as His children, as Jesus did. To do that, we must stop being prodigal children and retrace our steps homeward from the misery-making mainland of matter. We live in hope and die either with unfulfilled hope or broken-hearted. Very seldom does real, complete happiness dawn on the horizon of our lives. We must consider the steps by which we can retrace our steps Godward. The popular system of prayer is ineffective for the most part, because we do not mean business with God. When in trouble, People pray in churches and temples and repeating the Lord's Prayer loudly together, while in the background of their minds they are thinking of chicken dinner or something else equally as distracting. God, the secret knower of our thoughts, knows what selfish desires we have in our innermost mind, so he seldom manifests himself. While the demons of sensations and thoughts dance in the temple of body and mind, it is difficult to recognize God, who remains hidden behind the veil of silence within. The popular method of prayer does not reveal the psychology and art of prayer. Ordinary prayer consists of addressing our desires, half in belief and half in doubt, to an unknown God. If prayers are answered, a superstitious trust in God may result. If they are ineffective, distrust may follow. Even an answered prayer has to be tested and distinguished from a fulfillment which was coming anyway without the casual intervention and effective activity of the prayer. Effective prayer, therefore, must be scientific and definite in performance and must give intelligent understanding to all its factors. Those who want to demonstrate the scientific nature of prayer must first be sure there is a God to pray to. How can this be known? First, by accepting the testimony of great souls such as Jesus, Krishna, Swami Shankara, Babaji, and so on, who said that they found God, talked with him, and solved the riddle of life after listening to the truth from the sacred divine lips. They have said that God responds to law. They experienced this response and have said all people who conform to the law can test and experience it for themselves. Physical laws have to be interpreted by physical senses and judged by understanding. Divine laws have to be comprehended by concentration, meditation, and intuition. I'll say that again. Physical laws have to be interpreted by physical senses and judged by the understanding. Divine laws have to be comprehended by concentration, meditation, and intuition. Solitude is the price of God contact. Doesn't that mirror exactly what Papa said? Knowledge of the laws of tuning the body, mind, and soul radios to contact God is necessary. Since God is also above law, devotion is necessary to call his attention. The devotional call, if sincere, deep, and continuous, and if it is supplemented by sincere efforts at deep meditation, must bring divine response. Devotional demand is greater than law, for it touches the heart of God and makes him answer his naughty and good children alike. I had an image come to me one time of the various ways that people know of God. And what God showed me was that God is like a king in a particular land. And all the different people within that kingdom knew that there was a king, or at least had heard of a king. Some have never met or seen the king. So they believed by faith, but the king didn't really have that much meaning in their day-to-day living. The king seemed very distant, and their lives and demands of their daily lives was very real. And so while they may have mouthed, "God save the king," and all the rest, it didn't really matter that much to them. And then there are those who were involved in the government, and some who were involved in higher government, but still had never met the king. Perhaps they had a glimpse of him now and then. And those had a more passing acquaintance, and the king meant something more to them because they were carrying out the wishes of the king through their form of government. And then there are those who actually were granted audiences with kings and perhaps even worked with the king. And most of them came as supplicants. They wanted something or another. And of course, they felt that there are things that were demanded of them by the king, and so they worked at carrying out those wishes. But when they met with the king, they had one request or another for the king, and the king dealt with them in a very polite and very businesslike kind of way. And then there was the king's children and grandchildren. And when the grandchild would run in through the door without any ceremony at all and throw himself at the king and throw himself into the lap of the king was totally delighted. And he dispensed with all those who were there for the business of the day. And his mind was removed from everything except for the delight and the joy of that child sitting in his lap. And now there is nothing that he would not do that was within his ability in order to please that child, because there is nothing but a bond of love. The child did not come there wanting anything other than being in the presence of that most wonderful and divine King. And so when we ourselves come into relationship with God, do we come as a merchant? Do we come as a beggar? Do we say, I'll give you this if you give me that? If I meditate a little bit here and there, and if I pray with you, will you grant me long life? Will you grant me material abundance? Will you give me the things that I want? You're treating God like he's a merchant, a keeper of a shop who can give you things, and that's one kind of relationship to have. Or do you throw yourself at God himself? Do you enter into a divine loving relationship? It's such a different nature when you do it in this way. God is no longer remote. How can he be? And God cannot resist you. When you throw yourself at him with such love and such abandonment, and you want him only. And so we develop that kind of relationship with God, and then he responds to us in kind. Master continues here, law is based upon mathematical precision, but devotion is based upon claiming God as our own true love. For did he not make us in his own likeness? Law is exacting in its demand, while love causes God to surrender himself to the devotee. God can never hide from the person who exercises devotion, love, the law of meditation, and the soul call. Continuous personal zeal must be put forth. Whether God seems to respond or not, one must never cease loving. The beginner in devotion must not be discouraged if God does not respond to his immediate, intense demands. God never fails to listen to all soul calls, but he does not always respond in the way that we want him to. He has his own mysterious ways. Besides, he consciously responds only when he is sure that the devotee wants him and him alone. That is why some saints have tested with the disease or intense poverty or temptation, and when found to prefer God to health, life, abundance, or temptation, then God came. If one persists long enough in seeking, one will surely find God at the end of the trail. Saints are prodigal children of God, temporary sinners who do not give up trying to be good so as to get back to God. You must not be discouraged because of your ill health or poverty or moral weakness. Remember, sin is only a temporary graft, and that in reality you are eternally a son of God. Even if the world condemns you and casts you away, remember that God will ever seek to find you and to bring you back home. Never mind you cannot see him or hear him, hear his knock at the gate of your heart. For a long time you have been hiding from him and running away from the marsh of the senses. It is the noise of your own rowdy passions and the flight of your heavy footsteps in the material world that has made you unable to hear his call within. Stop. Be calm. Pray steadfastly, and out of the sullen silence will loom forth the divine presence. Master says so much in so few words and says it so beautifully. And if we would abide by what he is saying here, we will see the results. We will. Your mental microphone has been broken by the hammers of restlessness used by your noisy passions. That mind microphone must be repaired by deep silence or by the practice of the technique of concentration and physical discipline, preceding your prayer of loving demand. When you feel calm, your mind microphone is repaired, and then it is time to broadcast your first and foremost loving demand. Father, make me realize again that Thou and I are one. Father, make me realize again Thou and I are one. Father, make me realize again that Thou and I are one. Do not jump up after one or two mental broadcasts, but with continuous personal zeal, keep on consciously, with ever-increasing hunger of your heart, incessantly, mentally uttering the above affirmation for the lost unity with God, until you feel the ever-increasing thrill of joy bursting around your heart and your whole body. This increasing joy after meditation is the only proof that God has answered through devotion-tuned radio of your heart. The longer and deeper you meditate and affirm, the deeper you will feel and be conscious of the ever-increasing joy in your heart. Then you will know without doubt that there is a God, and that He is ever-existing, ever-conscious, omnipresent, and ever-new joy. Then demand, Father, now, today, all day, all tomorrows, every instant, in sleep, in wakefulness, in life, in death, in this world, and in the beyond, remain with me as consciously responding joy of my heart. After that, ask if you wish for healing of the fleeting flesh, or ask for passing prosperity, or for anything you think with wisdom that you should have, but never forget to request. All the time, Father, be Thou mine always, as Thou hast been, and may Thy love be the only King, reigning on the throne of my ambitions and desires. May I be able to make a fitting temple for Thee in every heart. And so we go to the King of Kings, the Creator of everything that is, your Creator, my Creator, the Creator of all this vast universe. It is the most amazing miracle, I think, that one that created everything is perfectly instilled in your heart and in your soul. There is no distance. There is no path that you have to traverse to go somewhere in order to realize this all-pervading unity. It is with you. But why are the doors closed? It is because we, in our desire to have this experience as a human being, as a human ego, we chose to shut those doors. We wanted to have free will. We wanted to have things our way. And we wanted to experiment with that and see what the results would be. And then when we go out into this world and we make a grand mess of ourselves and our lives and we see what a mess the rest of this world is, we see that human ego doesn't do such a good job at things. That it's when the ego assumes its rightful role once again as the observer, and what it observes is divine consciousness acting through this instrument of the human. That we are once again united, God and man, God and woman, become one. And then there is no longer separation. Sin can be thought of only as separation from God. From that, all the rest of the trouble begins. When we unite ourselves with God consciousness, sin is gone. It's evaporated. Because God and sin is simply separation. And so when you are united with God, sin cannot exist. Sin is the darkness that occurs when you have closed the door. We have all done it because we are all here on this earth and we have all lost our conscious unity with the divine. And so in order to regain that conscious unity, we have to open the door, but the door is very heavily encrusted with all of the things that we have done in our outward journey from God. So it doesn't answer always with just a little tiny pull. We have to put as much energy into opening that door as we have in putting it and keeping it closed. And if it were only up to our own ability and our own strength, it may never happen. But you have, and we all have, existing within us, divine grace. And if you call upon God with this kind of love, with this kind of childlike trust, throwing yourself at the divine consciousness, throwing yourself at God's lap, into God's lap, and loving being in His presence, all power becomes yours. And that door can loosen, and all of the things that have been hanging on and keeping it rusty and unable to be opened, suddenly those things just fall away and dissolve in the love of the divine consciousness. And through that love, the door opens. Now, through deepened meditation, we go through all the different layers of consciousness. We confront all those things that we have done in our outward journey from God. When our love shines through all the different things that we have done, and we never let go of God, we never give up on pursuing Him alone, then our love melts all the obstacles, and we enter into a divine union with Him. This is the greatest love affair that anyone can ever have. And it is true love. It is pure love. When you feel that love of God flowing in your heart, there is nothing, you realize, there is nothing that compares with that real love that we get from God. Because God is love itself. And it asks for nothing, and actually it demands nothing other than we keep our attention and our focus on that love. And as Khalil Gibran says, if that love finds you worthy, will guide and direct your course. You do not guide and direct its course. It guides and directs you. And in what you do, and what you say, and how you act. And you can't do it any other way. You can't do it any other way, because it is your all and all in all. And you find perfect peace and happiness and stillness. And you come into that union that Papa spoke about, of divine consciousness. Master, Mother, Papa, Babaji, Lari Mahasya, Sri Yukteswar, they are all lovers of the same divine consciousness. They valued it more than they valued anything else. And they would not cease until they were at last at one with their divine beloved. If you will dedicate yourself in this way, you may feel that there are moments when you're giving up something that has been valuable to you, or even that you may think is essential to your life. But when you let it go with fearlessness and devotion to God, and you keep your mind on God first, middle, and last, then you will be transformed and you will never look back and regret one thing that you surrendered to divine consciousness. And you will feel that you have been the luckiest person in the entire world, that somehow grace came in and lifted you up into this divine consciousness. So let us learn about true prayer and make that first prayer that we may attain our realization with God. And then everything else comes from that, as Jesus said. Now, you can still ask for things when you feel a prompting to do it. And if you feel a prompting and you're feeling God's presence within you, then accept that as God's will for you. And I remember when I first started doing prayer demands to God, and it felt very awkward and unnatural. I didn't like it at all, because I felt a demand was being too assertive with God. But you are God's child, and you do not need to be on the floor just hoping for a few crumbs to come from the table at which everybody else may sit. You can sit at the table and enjoy the feast in the presence of the divine consciousness. And God wants your good for you. He wants your prosperity for you. He wants your light. He wants your love. He wants everything for you. And so you do not deny yourself by going to God, but you fulfill yourself, your real self. And you find there that everything in your life God is giving to you, because out of His joy, out of His love, out of His kindness, out of His consideration. And when you receive it with such, and gratitude is such, it deepens your life to such a great extent. There are so many of us who have so much, and yet we are just focused on what we don't have. And this is a terrible shame, because we lose the moment of feeling that deep, deep gratitude for what we have been given. And indeed, we are in poverty when we do not enjoy the fruits of what we have already been given. And we have all been given much. And so there can be those who are millionaires and billionaires who are living in mental and spiritual poverty because they have no real gratitude or love for all that has flowed to them, all that their Creator has so lovingly given to them. So create this divine love affair. Throw yourself into the lap of the Divine King. Experience the joy of just being in that presence without any want, without any other alternative desire. And see and feel that divine consciousness saturate and pervade every cell of your being. And you will know such joy, such love, such peace, that you will scarce believe that it was always there, eternally knocking on your door, asking you to give it some permission to come in. Please join me in closing prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection, surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. God keep you and grace you always with His presence, now and always.